Do you want to talk about how you're feeling right now?
Oh, so many questions. What does this mean? What do I do?
Go on! Tell them what you think!
I liked it.
I think your calculations may have been off.
I think it's all right.
I just have a lot of feelings.
This pleases me.
These are perfectly normal feelings.
Do you even know what you sound like when you talk like that?
Now, shall we begin?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Real Feels Podcast. It's Drew here.
And Nathan.
Hey.
Hey, we're back.
We are back, baby.
Feeling good.
Yeah. Nathan, how you doing? I haven't seen you.
I know.
In about a week.
It's been a little while, but that's okay. I rode a sickness, and then I went in health, and I am doing good, for better or for worse. I'm doing great, man. You have had a week.
It has been just nonstop. So we took our Academic Decathlon up to Sacramento for the state level competition. We represented Kern County, and you know what? We didn't win, but you know, we kind of knew that we weren't gonna definitely win everything going in, but we represented ourselves very nicely. We came back home with 6 medals, and
ooh,
you know what? I'm proud of these kids. They worked hard, and you know what? They showed Sacramento and the rest of those teams, you know, what Kern County is all about.
Do you have like a Michael Phelps type in your group? Like, do you have like a, just, man, your ringer, the anchor?
The teams are divided between A, B, and C teams. All right. And yeah. Primarily they're divided up by their GPA. So, you know, A teams are going to be the highest, B teams, and then C teams. And A team is usually the ones that are going to primarily do the best. But then sometimes you'll have a C teamer that can really surprise you and do really, really well with what they're going to do. One girl who has been on the team for 3 years, she stuck it out and she came home with a few medals. And then surprisingly, we had a B teamer who came home with even more medals. And You know what? Again, just really, really proud of these kids. This year's theme was Africa, which I don't know, maybe USAD, the United States Academic Decathlon, you know, group decided to somehow contact Marvel and say, hey, we're going to do Africa. If you could get Black Panther into theaters around that same time, that would be perfect.
Just, you know, it would mesh really well with what we're trying to do, Marvel. Just see if you can fit it in. I don't know.
Yeah,
just
work with us here.
Did you watch Black Panther yet?
I have not. I have not watched it yet because I am steadily doing that Marvel movie challenge.
That's right. You are.
Every weekend. And I couldn't do it this weekend because obviously I was up in Sacramento, but I did it today.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to catch up.
Gotta catch up. Watching one movie a week up until the release of Infinity War. However, now someone brought it to my attention, my good friend Tim. He brought it to my attention that I am one movie ahead, so I can actually avoid
this
coming weekend. Take a break from it. But also, I kind of had to double up a few weekends because they pushed up the release of Infinity War from May to April.
Do you know why they did that?
You know what? I believe they wanted to avoid the conflict of trying to compete with Deadpool 2.
Which, from what I heard, like the focus groups, whatever, were not really thrilled with it.
Really?
Yeah, they said that they were expecting a lot more, laughs, and
not thrilled with Deadpool or
with
not
Deadpool,
thrilled with,
yeah.
Oh,
like they said that it. It just kind of fell flat, and yeah, I don't know. But I mean, I'm still going to love it. Ryan Reynolds can do very little wrong in my eyes. I'm sorry. That man.
That's very true.
I put him on a pedestal. I don't care.
I would quite agree. No, I'm definitely looking forward to it. Much like Infinity War, they keep releasing newer and newer
trailers. Oh my gosh.
And they just they finally let it out that Peter Dinklage is going to be in the film, which I'm fairly certain he's going to be. And I can't think of the character's name off the top of my head, but I'm fairly certain he's going to be one of the dwarves that is responsible for the crafting of like Thor's hammer.
I'm just kidding. Oh, okay. I didn't know.
Yeah, the Mjolnir, the weapons that that go to, you know, Thor and Odin and all of them. So I think he's going to be one of the dwarves.
You know, fun fact about Peter Dinklage and dwarves, he played one in Narnia. I think was he Nicabric? Or was he...
I think that's right.
I think it was Nicabric, but yeah, he was one of... I know he was one of them.
That seems very, very familiar, but I could be... Oh, you might be confusing me. I'm not entirely sure. You know what? You might be right. I think you might be right.
I hope so.
Yeah. Either way.
Anyways.
You know what, Nathan? Do you know what time it is?
Wada wada wah. Oh no, that wouldn't even really be this one.
It's not this one.
Right on time. The 3:10 to Yuma.
3:10 to Yuma. Ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be talking about the 2007, and I might have to add, not 2012, like I had mentioned on the previous episode. I don't know why I said 2012. I don't even know why 2012 was in my mind. But this is the 2007 remake of 3:10 to Yuma. The original movie came out in 1957, and this is a brilliant remake, a different take on it. It's a lot darker. It has a star-studded cast, not that the original didn't, but definitely more iconic figures for today, and definitely a director that has a pretty good amount of movies behind him that are definitely known. So we have director James Mangold. And you know what? In 2001, he directed Kate and Leopold. 2003, Identity, which is a personal favorite of mine. It's a very psychological, dark thriller. Fantastic, fantastic movie if no one has ever seen it.
But, you know, any movie that plays off of Agatha Christie's and then there were none, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's so good. Let's see, 2005, we have Walk the Line, and of course, 2007, 3:10 to Yuma. But more importantly, for more of our comic book fans out there, and definitely those who are in the know of what's happening in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we have, in 2013, he was the director of The Wolverine, and recently, 2017's Logan, which definitely, for Logan, we have this Western style feel and inspiration that definitely contributed to how great Logan was. So 3:10 to Yuma definitely played into that.
If I had to relate this to another movie of like what I feel like this movie did elevating the original, I would say almost because I would say The Grinch and how Jim Carrey's portrayal and just Ron Howard's writing of it was directing of it was just such a different but yet really really solid outlook and outtake on it, and it's like I just like this. And 3:10 to Yuma, it really does hold its own, I think, with a lot of other westerns that give it a run for its money. But I mean, man, the cast, I love this movie.
Yeah. It is a great, great film.
But it's not without flaws. Let's get that. No, let's go ahead and start this this wagon train on the right hoof, because
there's always something to look out for. There's always something that you can point out and find some fault in. But I honestly, for everything that you could possibly point out, I don't think it detracts from anything that you can find in the movie that is definitely going to grab your attention, keep you on the edge of your seat, and for all intents and purposes, give you a villain that you can just find charming.
Yes, Russell Crowe's villain, I would 100% agree, like, where you kind of give that, I like him, but I gotta hate him, like him, but I gotta hate him. Ben Foster, and we'll get into this, but we'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into it. And you know what, guys? We have a little trailer for you to listen to.
Roll it.
We'll be right back. probably cheaper just to let me rob the damn thing.
See which way he rode, Evans?
Like they were headed to Bisbee.
Hands up.
22 robberies, over $400,000 in losses.
Y'all notice he didn't mention any of the lives I've taken.
We will have Ben Wade convicted and hanged, and we will pay to make it happen.
I'll come.
So, boys, where are we headed?
Taking it to 310 to Yuma day after tomorrow.
Shouldn't have told him that.
Relax, friend. Now if we get separated, I know where to meet up.
He's a killer, Daniel.
Then someone ought to have the decency to bring him to justice.
I want to come with you.
Well, you can't.
What are you doing out here, Dan? You got a family to protect.
Well, talk to me like you know me, Wade. We ain't friends.
I told you to stay home.
I left home.
You turn around right now. Your boy ain't protecting you. He's following me.
You say one more word, I'll cut you down right here.
I like this side of you, Dan.
You're so sure that your crew's coming to get you?
They're lost without him, like a pack of dogs without a master.
Where'd they take him?
I don't know. Let me out of here!
Sure as God's vengeance, they're coming.
Coming this way, I've seen him.
There's gonna be 30, 40 more guns out there now.
Moss, you in there?
Sorry, mister, but I'm not gonna die here today.
It's just you left, Dan. Just you and your boy.
This town's gonna burn!
Call him off.
Why should I?
Because you're not all bad.
Yes, I am.
You just remember, it's your old man. Walk Ben Wade to that station when nobody else would.
All right, the 310 to Yuma.
It finally came.
Spoiler alert, it
showed up on time. No, actually, like just a little bit later, right?
A little bit later, but yeah. we'll get to that.
Yeah.
So 310 to Yuma, you have a small-time rancher who agrees to take hold of the captured outlaw, Ben Wade, who is waiting to go on a train from Contention to the 310 on the 310 to Yuma to prison. And along the way, they have to try and get him to the train while trying to avoid all of Ben Wade's groupies, his criminal outlaws that are desperately trying to get him back.
Run by his part-time secondhand man sidekick, Ben Foster, which, if enough time has passed, I want to jump into real quick. Ben Foster is the Oasis to the Beatles. Everyone thought that he was going to be, and I thought so too. When I saw this, I was like, oh, look out. Ben Foster has hit the scene, and he is going to revolutionize villains and acting. Like, this guy is awesome. I bought into Ben Foster very heavily. And it was, if you've listened to any of our other podcasts, in my guilty pleasure, it came crashing to a halt when in World of Warcraft, when he plays but even that, I shed a tear and I was like, Foster, it's just not... Okay, so back to my representation of Oasis to the Beatles. I remember reading two or three different articles talking about Ben Foster and how he was going to be huge. And I was like, okay, like, you know, I'll judge it when I see the film. And I saw it and I was like, you know what? I think he was the best. Probably the best character this whole movie. Like I liked his swagger. I loved his loyalty to, you know, this to the boss man, and just, hey, don't worry, boss, we'll take care of it, you know, and when you get back. And then I just thought he did a fantastic job. Upon later rewatches, though, it still holds up, but not, I don't know.
Yeah, no, he still holds up. I think he's a great character. I think that he does have his devotion to Ben Wade, and he definitely holds true to this, you know, I'm an outlaw, I don't really have to care about anything kind of swagger, like you're saying. And definitely, a smart dresser.
I don't think the writing for him was probably the most fantastic. I think he got some of the crappy lines that, like,
we'll talk about some of his lines later that I definitely want to, like, comment on. But I think it's more not of his actual, like, vocals that he had, but it's his silent, you know, agitation, his body language.
And when he gets mad, like, I love it.
It's that silent
stare.
Get mad,
man. Get mad.
That stillness of his eyes. And he just does a little bit of crazy. Quite right. All right. So you know what? Our movie opens up with Dan and his family in their farmhouse. It's the middle of the night. Little brother is coughing. He obviously has something wrong. Like, he's either got, like, pneumonia or tuberculosis, but he's breathing heavily. And you have the older brother. He strikes a match to look at his younger brother, and he rolls over, and you can see those old, like, dime novels that the kids could get. And it's all about the outlaws, the West. But then you can hear something outside. People are rustling off in the front porch. And you have these people setting fire to their barn. And
you got to pay bills.
They got to pay bills. So, you know, you have Christian Bale playing Dan. He runs outside trying to, like, stop him from setting the barn on fire, and he gets knocked to the ground. That's when we immediately see that he is missing a foot. Yeah, he is disabled. He's missing his foot. He has a fake leg that he puts on. And they're like, you know what? You got to pay up, or next time we're going to set the house on fire. And these people don't care. They don't care that they see him. They're not even covering their faces.
Which is weird. So, like, it's weird that, yeah, they have no shame of letting, you know, repercussions happen to them. It's like, oh, yeah, we just burned your personal property. Like, this is also business 101. When you destroy a money-making object of someone who owes you money, expect to now not get that money back.
Expect to not get money.
Oh, maybe. My gosh. Like, really, this is the message you send? Like, oh, and next week we'll burn the house. Fantastic. So now you get no money on top of less money, and you get the land back? Congrats. Like, I don't know. That was some really, really dumb strong-arm tactics that they just kind of whipped in there, like, yeah, we got to give them a reason to hate us, so burn your barn.
Yeah, they want the land back because the railroad wants to build on through it, and he's borrowed money, but he wants to pay the guy back. He is a down on his luck rancher, and obviously he is not very good at it, but he wants to have this honest life. He wants to do his best, and he wants to do right, not only by himself, but also by his family. And it's seeming kind of tough for him to try and do this when obviously he's not good at ranching, you know, the land is not, you know, providing for him the way it should. And then he has this guy who he's borrowing money from coming around and not only harassing him, but, you know, setting his crap on fire. He can't do any work if his barn is on fire and his horses die. So yeah, it's making it really, really tough for him. So the next morning he's getting ready and he's saying, like, you know, we're going to go to town. We're going to do this. I'm going to talk to the guy. He said, I'll fix this. And the son just looks at him in the face and says, no, you're not. And that's his oldest son, who's about 14 years old. And he has the attitude of just like, I hate you. Like, I hate what you are. I do not believe any word that you say. Like, you keep giving promises and it's never going to come to be. Even when they go off to try and get the rest of the cattle that ran off when the fire happened, the father was telling him, saying, You'll understand one day when you are walking in my shoes. And the son just kind of stops his horse and he says, I'll never be in your shoes.
I mean,
ouch.
Yeah, that's pretty bold to say to your dad. But I think that Christian Bale's character runs the disability card every chance he gets. It gets so old, like, oh, and he kind of throws out, like, oh, but I'm a war vet too. And it's like, come on, you can't go to that every time, which is when, you know, some really good lines come out of that, you know, but there's constantly him bringing up, oh, you know, if only I, oh, man, yeah, it's really rough that I have only one leg. It's one leg. I bet you there's so many people that are amputees or, you know, that don't have an arm or don't have a leg that are booing this film going, are you kidding me, bro? Like, I just ran a half marathon and I only have one leg. Like, suck it up. Like, I know life is hard, but it was a totally different time back then. But back then, that's also another thing. Back then, you just had to, like, do it and deal with it.
He was trying to make it seem as if he could, I don't know, again, gain the sympathy of his wife. He even, like, goes to his wife later on in the film, a little bit halfway, and he's trying to tell her, he's all like, I've been standing on one good leg for 3 years waiting for God to give me a chance or to give me a break. And he's all like, and I'm tired of standing around. I'm tired of waiting.
I'm tired of the way that, you know, my boys, like, it's a very,
yeah, I'm tired of the way my boys don't look at me. And he's like, and I'm tired of the way that, or sorry, I'm tired of the ways my boys don't look up to me. And I'm tired of the way that you don't.
Again, he just,
it's like Heartbreak City. He's trying to bring us and give us permanent residency in Heartbreak City form. And I mean, don't get me wrong. You can sympathize with him, but it also kind of seems like, due to the fact that he is not a good rancher, you almost get the feel that it is constant excuse after excuse after excuse.
That's what I mean. Like, he rides that horse so much throughout the entire movie, the whole movie, even at the end when he's talking to Ben Wade at the very, very end, of just like, oh, like, you don't know what it's like to be, you know, in my shoe, and oh man, I'm so sad, I'm a coward. Okay, like, I don't know. There was so many parts that I'm like, stop, just keep going. Don't worry about it, man. I know, I get it, it's hard, it's a hard life, but, you know, I don't know, your kid's sick, worry about that. Like, I don't know.
So they go looking for that. They go looking for the cattle, and then it transitions to the scene where we finally meet Ben Wade, played by Russell Crowe, and he's sitting on top of his horse, and you see him sketching something in a little book, and he's looking at this hawk that's just sitting on a tree, and he's, you know, drawing it out. And then we're also at that point introduced to Ben Foster's character Charlie Prince. And he rides up and he's all like, stagecoach is a coming, boss. The falcon, you know, the hawk flies away. And Ben Wade walks over, he rides his horse over, and he puts the drawing of the bird up on the tree. And it's interesting because him drawing things in this movie is very, very consistent. And I don't know if it's him just admiring beauty in life that is before him, or if it's a matter of him trying to capture what he thinks will eventually be gone and out of his life.
Maybe. I could see that parallel. I think that even more is he's just kind of, this is his version of taking a Polaroid picture and just kind of going like, and yeah, here, universe, I took this, I drew this, enjoy it. I'm not going to have
tree. Yeah. A bird was here.
Somebody will love this bird. But then they go after this stagecoach, with Peter Fonda at the helm, and they do, I'm sorry, the worst, absolute worst robbery of almost any film that I've watched. This is the heist that just is put to shame by every other heist, because they have the sniper, the Mexican sniper, who takes out, you know, some guys. Okay, maybe keep going with that.
Right, maybe keep going with that. When they clearly know that you have two guys on back, two guys on front, possibly two people inside, and on the back of the stagecoach is a Gatling gun. They know they have a Gatling gun. Why would you charge this stagecoach and then wrap around to the back side of it? Why not set up something where the stagecoach is going to have to run into it and possibly be detoured or turned over? I mean,
yeah.
Why would you take on a Gatling gun?
As soon as they saw the Gatling gun, like, why are they still riding towards this wagon? Like, oh yeah, let's just, right, you know, disperse. Catch up. Yeah, don't serpentine at all. Like, just come straight at it. And I'm surprised, like, 90% of them didn't die. You know, they do the very cliche.
Right, for a Gatling gun. Surprisingly, a large amount of the group actually survived. However, what I was very, very kind of pleased with, and it's not in the worst way that you can possibly think of, don't get mad at me, PETA, but a horse did die. All right? A horse died when the Gatling gun was fired, not really in the movie. However, we'll also get to that in a second. But during that shoot scene, a horse actually went down. And I'm thinking, thank God. Like, rarely do you ever see the fact that, like, you know, the animals get shot and taken down. Because clearly in war movies or even in, like, older Westerns, like, horses would get shot. Horses were definitely going to go down.
Did you watch Braveheart when he chops the horse's legs out? Like, yeah, like, horses got the raw end of every deal.
Right. And if you want to get the guy down on the ground, like on your level, you take out the cavalry.
Sorry, literally. Horse.
Yeah. So they go after the stagecoach, which is eventually, you know, the horses are, they break off from the stagecoach, which then the part of the stagecoach that's connected to the horses gets wrapped up into the ground, and it actually flips the entire stagecoach. Then everyone is just thrown to the ground. The gang surrounds them. They get off their horses and slowly just start walking over. And Charlie Prince, without even a care in the world and with flawless effort, there's almost a grace about him. He just looks over, grabs his gun, you know, just boom, one guy down, another one. Boom, walks over to one guy on the ground who's clutching his gut and he's coughing up some blood, just aims down, shoots him in the stomach, walks away. Like, no care in the world. It's almost, God, it's like a weird way to put it, almost like a beautiful callous.
And just his delivery of that line, that morning, Pinkerton, like that is what sold for me.
Pinkerton.
Bam, this guy degaffs and he is ready to just piss on the world.
It's all in his tone. It's like, morning, Pinkerton. Are you having a good day? I'm having a great day. Did you take a tumble? I'm so sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And for anyone who didn't know exactly what a Pinkerton back in the day was kind of like private security. They were law enforcement that were hired out to be on stagecoaches or, you know, to stand guard in front of a bank or anything like that. But they were private detectives or no detectives, sorry, security. And what I had actually found out that Pinkertons were paid $18 a day. We find this out, you know, in a couple more scenes in the movie. But I did the math. So $18 a day, and the movie is set roughly around 1884. That comes out to, let me get these lovely, lovely notes. So $18 a day comes out to $421.37 in today's money.
In today's money?
In today's money. That's the conversion. That's exactly how much money he would be getting paid a day.
That's pretty strong.
That's good pay.
Yeah.
That's good pay.
For just basically riding shotgun on, and most of those, you know, you're just riding in a tank. You know, I mean, who in their right mind is going to come at you with a Gatling gun, which, by the way, again, the worst placement for just, you know, the back of it. I don't know. There, so many parts of this wagon I was not impressed with, but still, you got a full-on Gatling gun, and they don't take that afterwards. They don't go, you know what, we could probably sell this huge
They're after the money.
Yeah.
They do not care about anything that is there.
Yeah, they just want the quick dollar. I get it.
Yeah, they just want the cash, but, I mean, you know what? Charlie Prince walking over to Peter Fonda's character, and he's like, my name's Charlie Prince. Maybe you heard of me. And Peter Fonda just like, you know, crawling on the ground in pain, looks up at him and says like, I heard of a gummed up whore named Charlie Princess. Is that you, Missy?
Wham.
And then he just shoots him in the stomach. And then he just kind of looks up, reloads the gun. It's like, I hate Pinkertons.
Basically, I hate the police.
Is
this the prequel to NRA? Like, you know, the whole.
No. Oh, you're terrible. No. But you know what? They eventually start like unloading everything in the wagon, and they get the lockbox out, break the lock, start taking the money. However, the one guy who went inside and he unloaded the wagon, he did not check all the bodies inside, which frankly, I am shocked and awed that anyone survived that thing tipping over and then like rolling a couple of times.
And the guy just kind of gets up like, oh, I just, you know, I didn't have my seatbelt on. Whoopsie. Yeah. And then you have obviously the stare down, and the guy realizes, oh, dude, we're both dead. Like,
right. He takes the one guy hostage, and Russell Crowe's character's like, okay, what's happening? He's like, put the guns down or he dies. And Russell Crowe's just like, well, I'm sorry. Sorry, Thomas. You done messed up. And he shoots his own man in the neck, and then he shoots the Pinkerton that was from the stagecoach, and he walks over to him and he tells him, he says, you know, we got but only a few rules in this outfit, and obviously you don't listen. And then he shoots him again. And you know what? It's obviously that there's like the simple rule. If you mess up and you put us in danger, you're dead. You're out of this group.
And once they go into town, and you know, the popo finally realizes, you know, there should be here. They go off kind of on that wild, oh, let's go get them. Everyone go right now. They leave So Ben Foster comes when they come back into town, and he lets them know, oh, like, I heard there was a bad guy that robbed your stagecoach, and that's why it's late. First of all, no one's questioning him. Like, hey, really? Oh, well, I was there, and yeah, like yeah, no one saying, recognizes
like, how did you
him?
Know? Like, yeah. Oh, I saw a Mexican sharpshooter, and you know, I swear it was Ben Wade. Like, no one's questioning. Where did you see a Mexican sharpshooter?
And how do you know who Ben Wade is? Like, yeah, you spotted a sharpshooter? Like, okay, interesting.
You know, it's an elusive plan. He sends the police on a wild goose chase. When they go out, they find Dan's character and his kids, who have been relieved of their horses by Ben Wade. They get Peter Fonda's character up, and they transfer him back into town, because by that point, they realize that Ben Wade has duped them, and they got to get back into town.
They get some mad Good Samaritan points for that, though.
He was lugging his lifeless body.
A priest and a Levite walked by, and they both said, sorry, no.
No one
and then
said,
he said,
sorry, we can't help him. We have to go shopping. Sorry,
we can't dirty our hands. And he came by and said, you know, let's go. I'm going to take you to the inn. Yeah. Good man. Good man.
Right.
Showing his boys the right way.
Yeah. You know, while they're in town and they're on that wild goose chase, it's actually probably one of my favorite scenes, to where it actually goes through Charlie Prince's character when they're on the bar and they're pouring drinks and they're, you know, saluting the ones who died. And they know it's time to go because they're going to be back soon. And Charlie, he like says to Wade, or he says to Ben Wade, he's like, we got to go soon. And he notices he's not paying attention. Because Ben has his eye on the bartender lady, and he's like, "Okay, so we'll go cross the border, and you know, I'll wait for you." And it's just kind of silent, and he sees that he's looking at her, and then Ben's just like, "Okay, Charlie,"
okay.
And you can see this disappointment almost in his eyes, and he gets up and leaves, which, you know, part of me secretly thinks that Charlie Prince might have a thing for Ben Wade.
Oh, yeah. No, that's that kind of subtle.
I think it's implied. I think it's subtly implied, which is definitely shows his devotion to him. Why that he is so adamant about getting him back when Ben Wade definitely gets caught. The rest of him even say, like, why are we going back for him? He messed up.
Well, he says, did you forget what he done for us? And so, I mean, there he kind of alludes to some
history.
Backstory. Yeah, some
history.
But you know what, though? It makes the ending way more believable that, like, if he has this little thing for him because, okay, and I thought about this.
Oh, the look on his face at the ending. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, like, when he hands him his gun, and we're jumping way ahead. Spoiler alert, he makes it on the train, everyone. So the weird part that I was like, wait a minute, this is kind of weird. So they're chasing him this whole time. And, you know, Ben Foster's trying to, like, or Charlie Prince is trying to figure out, like, boss, like, get down. Like, what are you doing? Like, let me just kill this dude so you can, like, go free. And at some point, he had to have kind of thought, you know what? Maybe he doesn't want to be free. Maybe he wants, for some reason, to go to prison. Okay, I'm going to let him. So when he shoots the rancher, kills him, and he hands Ben Wade his gun, why do you hand it to him loaded? All you had to do is just unload it and then be like, oh, I forgot to like load it up for you, boss. Like, but that just kind of like makes sure that he's cool. Because if he is cool, he just goes, hey, Charlie, can I get my bullets? Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. And we're
yeah,
cool.
But you know what? I think it's the pure trust that he has in him.
He's
that's
like,
why
oh, yeah,
he's giving
no
him the gun.
Way
that
he's
going
to like pop me and
right. No, no, he's not going to turn his back on me. You know, he trusts me. We're friends. We're compadres. He knows how much that he means to me. He's not going to betray that.
Oh, P.S. Ben, I just got ran over by a stampede of cattle. Like, yeah, no, it's cool, dude. It's cool. Try and shoot me in the back.
I traveled almost 200 miles, got run over by cattle and shot in the neck because I wanted you back. I don't know how to quit you.
I'm just a cowboy standing in front of another cowboy. Oh God, can this whole thing just be a love story? Like, is this like,
dude, it having the minor love story of Charlie Prince going after and trying to win Ben Wade, even though he probably knows he will never have him. I can dig it. I can totally dig it. It's
so
motivation for his own character, and it shows it shows the subtle, again, the subtle craziness that he has, where he is so driven for anyone who insults Ben Wade, challenges the fact that he's part of Ben Wade's gang, or when he has to be away from Ben. It's his own motivation to, like...
Which is another reason why I didn't understand, like, okay, so Ben obviously wanted to get caught up. Like, you don't hang around the town that, like, the cops are, like, specifically looking for you. But yeah, he does. He, like, hooks up, and he's like, yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, that seemed kind of weird.
They'll never find me in the one saloon in this town. Like,
the one saloon. It's like, well, he either wants a whore or he wants a drink, possibly in the same place.
Does anywhere we know offer both?
The Quickie Mart,
yeah. No.
So this is also one of those scenes where it's fantastic because when they finally get back to town, Dan and the sheriff and all of them, he goes over to the loan officer and he tells him, like, you got to give me more time. Here, take this little trinket that literally belongs to my wife, but she doesn't know that I took it. So wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The loan officer tells him, like, you know, just back off. The land's going to be mine. Just deal with it. I'm sorry. Tough case. You know, Dan has kind of had it up with him, and he goes chasing after him into the saloon. And that's where he comes face to face with Ben Wade again. And at that point, he makes a stand. He literally mans up in front of Ben. He says, you lost me my cattle. Or, you know, I got my cattle back, but two of them are dead. So you owe me for that cattle. And, you know, Ben kind of tosses him some money. He says, you're right. He says, how much do you get paid for a day's work? He's like, I get $2. He's like, okay, well, there's $2. And then Dan's kind of looking around and he's noticing the law enforcement are kind of creeping up around. So they're going to make their entrance and get him. And he said, you also took up my boy's time. And Ben, he's like, you're right. There's $2 more. And then one of the best parts, I think it's fantastic, where he says, anything else you want to get paid for? Dan? He said, you can give me $5 more. He's like, what's that for? He's like, for making me nervous.
A good line. Very well delivered. And
so then they come in, they arrest him. All the while, over at the vet, we have Alan Tudyk from Firefly and Rogue One, you know, our favorite robot from Rogue One. He's so good.
He's good in everything.
And he is operating on Peter Fonda, pulling the bullet out of him, and, you know, he's pulling it out, and he says, this is going to hurt like a son of a bitch. He's like, don't worry, it's not the first time I've been shot, which...
Ah, Peter Fonda!
You Peter Fonda! You, fun fact, folks, when Peter Fonda was 10, he accidentally shot himself in the stomach with a gun.
Way to call it back, Peter Fonda. Way to bring it all full circle.
So he's looking around, he's like, what the hell kind of doctor are you? He's like, well, you know, it's kind of nice to have a patient who can talk back once in a while.
Now, is this trope played out?
Oh,
that the
only doctor in the town is a vet?
Is a veterinarian?
Well, you know what? Honestly,
like,
it's,
come on. Here's
the thing. Like, around the time that this is, in 1884, the cattle drive was starting to become a little more, you know, prominent out in the West. You have more people wanting their cattle tended to and animals looked after, that not every town is actually going to have their own doctor. And even Peter Fonda, you know, comments on the fact that Brisby was this piss poor little town. So not every town's going to have a doctor. It's kind of like, you know, the random, you know, chance that even places like Perfection, Nevada is going to have their own doctor. So the fact that, like, a vet was there, I think was actually a bit more ideal or even believable than a real doctor.
In this case, I would say, okay, like, this, it slides. And, you know, Alan is definitely a great choice for that. He delivers such good, I wouldn't even say, like, humor, because he isn't really the comedic relief in this.
It's more sarcastic one-liners.
And just that kind of, like, the dopey, I'm not supposed to be here, but I'm here. And he's kind of the...
Like, when they're picking the group to go with everybody, they're all like, all right, well, the Pinkerton's going to go. Dan, you volunteered for $200. Well, we want the doc to go. And he's like, what? Wait, no. What? Why would I go?
Yeah. I have no... Even Kevin says, you know, doc can't shoot for shit.
Exactly.
Thanks for pointing out my, you know, I didn't do very well in basic training during boot camp. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun with Alan Tudyk being in the film. I mean, Russell Crowe was actually the one who brought him up to the director and said, I think he would be a fantastic, you know, person to play the vet. He's definitely got to be in this film.
I would weep, full on bawl my head off if Russell Crowe, like, took me to a director and was like, this guy right here, this guy's a good dude. I would be that, like, crying woman at Jesus's feet, like, thank you so much. Oh my God. Just a mess.
You know,
an absolute
actually, like,
mess.
Before Russell Crowe actually even got the role of Ben Wade for 310 to Yuma, originally it was going to be Tom Cruise.
Ooh.
I don't like the sound of it. I don't even want to picture it. I think it would have just, it would have been flat.
And instead of Christian Bale, it was going to be Jim Carrey. So that's just even, no, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Oh, no, it would, man, you know what? Thank God Tom Cruise backed out of the film and Russell Crowe got the job. So that I am very, very thankful for.
It's funny because I think Russell Crowe kind of, maybe even more recently, is missed on some of his roles. Cough, cough, The Mummy. But I really think that in his earlier days with Gladiator, with this, Beautiful Mind, he was such a good actor. Like, tier one or tier two acting, I think that he just had it.
He had it. And he had everything in his corner. He had people loving him. He had fantastic films. I mean, you throw one phone at a person's head, and really, you come out of the lock. I could not resist.
Oh, man. What a guy.
You have an incoming call.
Do you also know that, like, okay, back to Ben Wade and his posse real quick, that he has an unlimited amount of bad guys?
Yeah, they keep, like, forming. Like, people die, and then suddenly he has more.
Like, they lose, like, what, four or five guys
they
during the
They lose four guys during the assault on the stagecoach.
And then they're, like, the posse kind of rolls back up with, like, 12 guys, and then by the end, I mean, at the very end, there's only like
six
guys.
I mean, obviously, they apparently died somewhere in the midst of it,
but like, no one's shooting at them. No, you only have Christian Bale and Christian Bale who shoots like maybe four times with a shotgun, like, and a couple times with a pistol, but they're not. I get it, bad guys have an unlimited supply of more henchmen, foot soldier.
Yeah, they always seem to have more bad guys. They always seem to have more bullets. They always seem to have more cover to hide behind. They always have.
No, I think less. I think they have they could be behind full coverage and they still are getting shot. This is Stormtrooper 101. Like, get down. Quit standing in the middle of the street shooting. But then, you know, also you have Ben Foster who gets so sick and tired of them at the end. But we'll get to the end scene a little bit later. But keep going. So where are we at?
They're picking the group to go off to take Ben Wade to the 310 to Yuma. And they definitely decide that, all right, you know, Dan's going to go with us. He was his best marksman in his, you know, in his military group. And he says he'll do it for $200 because he knows that's exactly what he needs to help pay off the rest of the money for his ranch. With it, they have to transport Ben Wade somewhere for the night, but not before, you know, Charlie Prince rides through town, seeing that Ben Wade has been arrested and just screaming, "This whole town's gonna burn!" And he shoots down one deputy and then a lone Chinaman as he's walking through town.
Poor guy.
He rides off, not stopping. Or sorry, not even like keep going. He stops at the edge of a hill so he can just look out at the town. Like, you just killed two people and you're going to wait around. Again, it's this sensibility of like he is apparently invincible and no one's going to stop him. So they take Ben Wade over to, you know, Dan's house. And while they're traveling there, they do this little switcheroo.
Oh, my gosh. Can you roll cut it out right now? Just okay. Roll it right
let's
now.
Let's roll cut it out real quick.
What were you thinking?
Well, you got me. By all accounts, it doesn't make sense.
And you've got to cut it out.
Yes. Yes, folks. Yes, yes, yes. This is my cut it out scene right
cut
here.
Cut it out is where we take different points in the movie. Obviously, we're going to do it early. We're different points in the movie where we think that certain parts could definitely either be taken out of the movie or changed up slightly, and they're not going to detract from the overall story. So, Nathan, since you are an eager little beaver, what is your cut it out?
I know that, like, I think about, like, everything I've said in this podcast thus far, and I am kind of being a Debbie Downer. So after this, I will really try and pick it up, I swear. But after the crappiest heist ever pulled, you then have to follow up an even worse plan of, oh, the car's going to get stuck in the mud. We're going to, we'll come out and fix it and help you on your way. And they bought this crap? Like, they're not staking out the house just in case they made a switch. Like, they fully,
Charlie Prince is up on the hill. He's watching the entire thing, but it's from the angle. He's literally on the other side of the wagon.
It is so garbage, that they pull
Ben
Wade
out and they swap him with a deputy and give him Ben Wade's hat. Apparently, the entire outfit and his face are, you know, completely exempt. But the fact that he has Ben Wade's hat.
Yeah.
That's Charlie Prince going, I know that hat.
That's
I love that hat.
This whole plan, I thought, was absolutely garbage. And I thought, really, is this what we're supposed to believe, that this little switcheroo of, one, how do you get one wheel of a wagon off a bridge like that? And, oh, hey, thank God I'm right next door to your house. And, you know, oh, there's three of you that come.
It's the bad acting of the local sheriff looking over going, hello, Ben.
Hey,
can you help me here, please, Ben?
We're orchestrating this perfectly. Do they recognize my hand movements as a sign of distress? Like, this whole thing, man, I can't jump on board with it.
Neither can Ben Wade, because as soon as he gets out and he realizes their entire plan that seems to be quote unquote foolproof, Ben Wade even says, like, remind me never to play cards here.
Yeah, because you guys are garbage.
You guys cannot bluff worth anything.
He's like, my gang could not be this stupid to fall for this. And guess what? They somehow are. And they go all the way to, like, the tail end of the chase and then finally, like, snipe him, which...
They apparently fool the entire posse. And again, this is jumping ahead a little, but they send the wagon off to a fort. And their plan is that by the time that the wagon gets to the fort, hopefully it's going to beat, you know, Ben Wade's gang. And they even say, like, oh, if it gets to the fort, there's nothing they can do against an entire infantry. So they'll think that Ben is inside and they can't get to him, and he'll get to the train, you know, no harm done and sight unsound. It's a foolproof plan.
Yeah.
But obviously,
nothing can go wrong.
This is not the way it's going to be. Oh, man. Okay. We're going to jump up a little since we just did your cut it out, and I'm going to do my cut it out. So when they take Ben Wade along the way and they're traveling with him, Ben gets off his horse to fight Byron McElroy, played by Peter Fonda, Pinkerton. Pinkerton has just insulted his father, but more importantly, he insulted his mother. He said, like, oh, you know, I'd be a bit salty, too, if I came from the dried up womb of some, you know, ungrateful.
Oh, man.
And he just knocks him to the ground and he beats him up. And then he, you know, starts to choke him out with a shotgun. And he's like, you know what, Byron, I always liked you, but you never knew when to shut up. And then he gets over closer to his ear and he said, even bad men love their mamas. And he throws him off the cliff.
You didn't like this?
No.
It's leading up to this. I was like,
I love that. You gotta lead up to what's gonna go wrong.
Spoiler alert, this is my favorite line in the movie.
No. That's a great part. No, it's when Ben Wade is like holding him off with a shotgun and he's telling him, like, put their guns down, put them down. And up from behind Ben Wade comes Dan's son. Apparently, he's been tailing them, even though he was told to stay home like a good 14-year-old boy should. And he puts a gun up next to Ben Wade's head, and he says, put it down, Mr. Wade. And he puts the gun down, and he says, Dan, tell your boy to calm down. And he's like, don't worry. You know what? You're not gonna shoot me. You wouldn't shoot me. And suddenly he turns his hand, the kid, and he fires the gun to prove to him. He's like, you know what? I'm meaning business. I'll shoot you. It's the point in which he has actually just turned his hand and fired the gun. When the camera angle changes, you can clearly see that in the direction that he moved his hand over about like 5 or 6 inches, he is clearly firing into the crowd where his father, the railroad man, and the doc are standing or sitting on their horses. More importantly, the angle of the gun is perfectly lined up with the doctor. So clearly, he shot the doctor.
How great would that have been if they just, like, or, like, the horse is just dead and they, like, are looking at him like, What are you doing?
Could you imagine? Could you imagine him like, it's okay. You're not going to shoot me.
No, but no. I will shoot this horse.
Boom. And suddenly just.
Oh my God.
And the horse and the vet's like, great, great. I came to get away from work. And now I have to operate.
This is what I trained my whole life for. I need a boiling pot of water, some coffee, and a crap load of lime.
So that's my. Oh my gosh, that's my cut it out, because not simply because it's a bad moment, because I think it's a great moment where he could definitely prove that, you know, I am a badass. You're not. I'm in control. I'm only 14. But it's the fact that he turned his hand and he clearly shot into.
Why not just cut out all of Logan Lerman's scenes in this film? Like this kid, like this actor, I've never been like really, really impressed with him. And this movie is zero exception to that. It is rough to watch almost every scene. He is so cringeworthy on everything he says.
His attitude is cringeworthy. It's like there's so much.
He's
anger
such an emo like kid, and it's like, shut up, man! Like, go listen to some Dashboard Confessional. Like, I can't handle you. Shout out to Dashboard Confessional. I love emo music. What? Okay. Anyways, continue. Logan Lerman.
Okay, you know, if we go back just slightly, when they're traveling along the ways, they're camping out at night, and you have the railroad guy's, the loan officer's lackey kind of comes along. He's like the muscle, and he's stolen Ben Wade's gun, and he's taken his horse, and he says, like, this is now my
gun. Oh, you mean Kevin Durant? Like, one of the, like, unsung heroes of this whole film? Oh my gosh. Love him in pretty much everything he does. Continue.
He's
so good. You hate him.
I do not like him. I do not like him in the movie.
He's so good. I don't. What are you kidding me? He's the Joffrey to this film. You hate him so much, but you're like, you know what?
Right. You like hate it. Him and you want him to die.
Oh, for sure. But not like this.
Like you don't mind him dying. No, definitely this not like this. You don't mind him dying, though. Like, he's just annoying. But he's that annoying, again, where you like him so much that you're not sad that he does die. But he keeps taunting Ben Wade. He won't let him sleep. And he's constantly, like, you know, antagonizing him while he's trying to nap. And he's, like, sitting off in the corner, just staring at him, just going, they're going to hang me in the morning until my time is done. They're going to hang me in the morning, and I'll never see the sun.
True. Nice.
And he just keeps
pipes.
Singing to him. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Like that. But he keeps singing to him, and it's that antagonistic, you know, lyric of like, oh, you're going to die.
You're going to be singing this song.
We're going to take you.
And he does. Yeah.
But it's almost poetic justice, because from the meal that they had at Dan's house, Ben Wade, he snuck a fork. And so when Tucker, you know, Kevin Durant's character fell asleep in the middle of the night, Ben Wade just like snuck over to him and started repeatedly stabbing him in the throat.
How did this not win Best Sound? Like, oh,
you know what? It was actually nominated for an Academy Award for Best Sound.
Shut
editing.
Up.
It was.
It's only because
it was nominated
of this
for
scene
two
right
Academy
here,
Awards.
It's only because of this scene. Oh God.
It's only because the thwacking?
That's the only word I can use to describe it. Oh,
like,
oh my God.
Wet thwacking.
Oh, so rough.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen the movie, guys, be prepared for hearing a two-pronged fork repeatedly going into some guy's neck.
And you know that like they quickened the death, like most deaths in movies, but like that would be a miserable death of just feeling your,
you'd be immediately choking on your blood, not gasping for air while feeling, you know, constantly being stabbed.
All of it. It's just so bad.
Oh, it's horrifying. That literally gave me some shivers. They knock him out. Actually, they don't even knock him out. You have Byron McElroy walk over to him and start repeatedly hitting him mercilessly with the butt end of the shotgun, which I even made a note. I'm like, looking at Ben Wade after he's been just, you know, good gosh, why
he
is
heals
he,
up so
why is
fast,
he not, like,
though? He's Logan in right. this. He's literally Wolverine.
He is Logan. God. I mean, he would have, like, missing teeth. His eye would be caved in. he'd have a broken jaw or two. I mean, God, he would have so much more damage on him with the amount of force and the amount of hits that he took from a shotgun butt.
Yeah, it's a little overboard. And they even like are like, okay, dude, like, you got him.
Yeah, they're telling them, they're all like they watch it for a few seconds. They're like, well, he did just kill someone. We'll let him have 5 seconds to hit him.
It's a painful reminder, though, that like, oh yeah, this guy is pure evil. Like this is someone that like, if you close your eyes for a second, he'll kill you. And that, I think that
he would have no remorse. Yeah. He would have no remorse for it, which is interesting enough because like, even for everything that they say, like, you know, he's murdered so many people, as Dan told his wife, he told her, you know, he's killed more men than the drought.
But then again, the way he uses his gun too, which apparently when he told Kevin Durant, oh, careful, that gun's cursed.
Be careful. It has a curse on it. Oh,
gosh.
You know what? I might want to take back my cut it out. You know what?
Well,
cut
no, that's definitely going to be in, yeah, spoiler alert, everyone. That's going to be my worst line of this film. Gosh. Has no payoff whatsoever. I'm sorry. You know what? I said I was not going to be a Debbie Downer. I just recalled. I'm going to be upbeat. Even though the saddest of the deaths is coming, like the one that made me like really like go, what? Oh, come on. No. Let him live. You know?
Yeah.
But all right. Upbeat. Here we go.
Upbeat. Keeping it up. Keeping it good. They eventually get back on the road and they're heading to contention. Ben Wade has actually escaped and he's making his way to try and get the shackles that are on him, you know, taken off. So he makes his way to this little mining camp where they're trying to build some railroad tunnels through the mountains. And while he's there, a local sheriff spots him and he's like, oh my God, that's Ben Wade. He killed my kid brother 6 years ago in front of me. And who's next to him? Who's next to him but a man who should never be in a Western? That's right. It's Luke Wilson.
Besides Vince Vaughn, maybe? Yeah, Luke Wilson should not be in Westerns.
I don't like Luke Wilson in Westerns. This is the second Western that I've seen him in this year.
At least Owen Wilson holds down like the Western, you know, with Shanghai.
Shanghai Noon. Because he has Jackie Chan to carry him.
Oh, that's such a weird phrasing right there. Like, Jackie Chan is carrying you in a Western? Like, really?
You know what? I had a film professor in college. I had a film professor in college and she... Okay, I gotta brace myself.
Drum roll.
She said that, like, you know, so many movies were bad and this and that. And she said that certain movies have to have these varying qualities in order to make them good, like editing and sound and different elements of drama and suspense and comedy and romance. And, you know, if it can have all that, if it can be all these elements, it can be a fantastic movie. And we're like, wow, like, what movie is this? What could it be? And she looks at us and she says, Shanghai Noon.
And you're like, well, it does have Lucy Liu, so I'll give you that. Yes.
And I mean, here's the thing. I like Jackie Chan a lot. I really do. And I don't think I've actually seen a Jackie Chan movie that I don't enjoy. Like even simple ones like, gosh, what? The Tuxedo or The Medallion. Even simple
Just
ones like
super
those, you
popcorn.
Still find it charming.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a super popcorn movie because it's Jackie Chan. Like, what are you gonna hate about it? It's Jackie Chan. But for her to say that this is the best movie of all time.
Oh, she was saying that it's the best movie of all time?
Oh, yes. In her mind, this is the greatest film that has been made.
Wow.
And I was like, why are we, who are you? Where are your credentials?
I can't take anything you say from here on out. Seriously.
I don't want to take this class anymore.
I want to go home. I'm done.
So Luke Wilson is there. And ironically enough, he is the only character that I had seen in this entire film with the proper colored teeth for someone of that time period.
I would have to agree with you on that one. I don't think anyone else has. Doesn't Charlie Prince have some pretty GNR teeth?
Oh, yeah, he's got some. Yeah, because he has the one scene where he smiles. when he's playing the dopey, you know, like, oh, I think the stagecoach got robbed, mister. Yeah, but man. Okay, so they're there. They've captured Ben Wade. Dan and the guys, they eventually make their way to the tunnels, and they're like, well, this is possibly the only way that he could be going, which, again, I don't know how they're finding him there, but what are you going to do? And they eventually get him back, but not only before they start a fight with the local law enforcement and Luke Wilson and Alan Tudyk, the doc. He's looking at them as they're torturing him, and he's like, "That you can't do that. That's immoral." And Luke Wilson just looks at him and says, "Morality ain't got nothing to do with it."
Well said, good sir.
And so Alan Tudyk, he takes a shovel and he bashes this mountain of a man in the face, and he knocks him down, and they eventually get Ben, they get him on a horse, and they're riding out of the tunnel, and they are gonna before they can blow up the tunnel and make the rocks fall and get away.
And literally
someone fires a shot. And you have Alan Tudyk on the horse, and he's riding. He says, "Did you see it? Did you see me hit that guy in the foot?"
It's so, like, depressing, because you know as they're riding away.
Why does Alan Tudyk have to die?
You're like, in everything.
Whenever we fall in love with him. Whenever we fall in love with him, he always has to die.
In every film, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just tell me when you're going to die, dude, because I need to brace myself, because this is too much.
He's riding fast. He's riding hard. He's a leaf on the wind. And then he's down.
And down, he's, down, down.
And he's on the ground, and he's looking up, and he's all like, did we make it? And they have to, man, it's just one of those moments where your heart is breaking as they look him in the eye and they say, "Yeah, we made it. We made it. And it was all thanks to you." And then he's gone.
Shadows. Oh my God. What if Russell Wilson was just like, "Who will help me carry him?" Bam, it all comes full circle. No.
Oh, it's perfect. Riding out of that tunnel, they're merely miles away from contention. They can see the town, and that's where the 310 to Yuma is going to be.
All the while, his gang is like kind of this like one step behind, kind of catching up.
They eventually catch up with the stagecoach. 80 miles out of the way.
Because they're riding hard, obviously. They just keep on trucking. But they meet them up in town where the local sheriffs are, or was it the sheriff or the marshal?
It was the marshal, and he had some deputies with him. And they're up, and they meet him up because they're kind of laying low in the hotel, and they, you know, tell him like, "Okay, we'll take him from here. We'll march him over to the train station, and we'll keep everything nice and easy, and everything's going to be fine." And it isn't until the point where Charlie Prince and the rest of the gang, they make it into the town, and the barkeep at the hotel motions to Charlie Prince through the window and basically tells him, like, you know, by nodding, "Hey, Ben Wade's upstairs." And so, you know, Charlie Prince calls out to him, and he says like, "Hey, boss, you okay?" And for some reason, I don't know why the hell they do it, they basically nod to him and tell him, "Yes, you can tell him you're okay." I'm thinking, just be quiet.
Yeah, go ahead and pick up the phone, and this is your visitor hours. Like, go ahead and...
Right.
But we'll be watching you.
Right.
And then he gives them some very keen details on all of the people in the room.
Like how many there are. You know, I mean, why doesn't he just tell them, like, "Yeah, there are four people in here. One's about 5'6". The other is about 6'2". They're both armed.
Two of them
and,
armed.
You know, I think one is a Sagittarius.
Don't worry. One's a rancher with... a non-working foot. So
a non-working foot, and his very, very incompetent son.
So just in case he's the one that's leading me out, you know, maybe just aim for the good foot, and you got him.
Yeah.
And then, like, when they do shoot, like, the bad foot, they should have been like, "You're hitting the wrong foot." He hates these feet.
He hates these feet. So they're gonna go and head towards the train station, but not before Charlie Prince is looking around the entire town, and he yells out to him. He says, "That's Ben Wade up there. We will give you 200 cash dollars if you shoot any of his captors." And they're like, "Oh yeah, I'll take some of that. Oh yeah, yeah, me too. Yeah, 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 whatever." So you see everybody in town is grabbing a gun, and everybody's just getting ready for an all-out bloodbath. I mean, it's not exactly, I think, the chaos at the very end of Young Guns.
Yeah.
but
good reference.
It's kind of getting there. And so, like, at that point, the marshal's like, "There's like 40 more guns out there. Sorry, fellas, we want to live." And so they hand over their badges. They're like, "You're in charge now." And they walk down, they put down their guns. And as they stand there with their hands up in front of the crowd saying like, We are no longer his captors. We are unarmed. We are going to go. And what does
someone
the crowd
do? Someone just yells out, $200 a head! Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, dude, boom, 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 boom. And they just kill
him. Oh, just mow
him down. They kill them dead, which actually was different. That was a difference in the original script, because the original script, they were going to help him get across the rooftops, but the director's like, I don't really know how safe this is going to be. I don't know if it's actually going to look right. If, you know, the sheriff, who maybe has like another 150 pounds on top of Russell Crowe, is going to be as agile running across the rooftops. So they changed it to the fact that, like, when they stepped out and they said, all right, we're going to leave, they just unloaded all of their bullets.
Although I kind of would have liked the others, just to have a couple more people get taken out. This really reminds me of like Clear and Present Danger. And you just have these like Secret Service guys that are giving their lives to help get Harrison Ford and his buddy like out of there. And you know, the one guy that like shuts the door and he's like, go, go, go. And he's getting shot like five times in the back. You're like, this is the kind of stuff that I kind of wanted to see as the two of them are running from the hail of bullets. Just someone that maybe takes the bullet for him and is like, you know, get him to the train and, you know, goes down. But then I get that why they, you know, hey, it's less mouths to feed on set. Like, all right, you're all done for the day.
Right. But I mean, I think what it comes down to is that we eventually have this definite picture of what is important to everybody in this society at this time. Like, people are always scrounging for money. They're wanting to make a better, you know, better sacrifice for themselves, whether or not it's, I mean, literally people are jumping, they're chomping at the bit for $200, which, don't get me wrong, that's a lot of money, but $200 to kill somebody.
To kill law enforcement.
Anyone in that room, including the law enforcement. Ben Wade is offering Dan, you know, this much money. And then Dan says like, is that what you think that I'm worth? And, you know, Ben's like, no. I think you're worth $1,000. And he's like, I'll give you that money. So we have people being offered money to kill. We have Dan being offered money to not kill Ben, which is essentially putting him on that train to go to 310 or on the 310 to Yuma to be hanged. So money to not kill him. And we're wondering like what it is worth more. And really at this point now, Dan doesn't even care about the money. He wants something that is worth more. And that is his son's respect.
Well, I mean,
He told his son, he's like, no, I said I'm going to get him on this train, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. Because really, he wants to prove, because I think he knows that he's probably going to die, all right? So I think he wants to show to his son that he is a man of his own word. Because in his son's eyes, he's constantly failing. He's constantly giving promises that he cannot
keep. But he goes to the train Baron guy, and he says, you know, he ponies up to the bar and says, okay, I'll have a cheeseburger and I'll get fries with that. You're going to take care of my wife. I want my kids to go to college, Oxford. He makes his demands, but yeah, he definitely is like, hey, here's my time to show that I'm not a coward, that this inner demon that's been kind of beating me down for so long, you know, I can stand up to it. And yeah, it's a nice little moment for, you know, father and son. But then they kind of give him the, like, all right, you got 60 seconds on the clock, Omek, let's do this. And he just runs this Legends of the Hidden Temple gauntlet. And
right, they're running through the town, and you know, they got to try and avoid everybody in the town. Again, is also trying to shoot at them, which Charlie Prince, you kind of brought it upon yourself. He starts yelling at people saying, hey, no, the rancher, not the black hat. Shoot the rancher. And he gets pissed and he shoots one of the townsfolk. And then another townsfolk. And then another townsfolk.
A better representation. Not Legends of the Hidden Temple, even though that's one of my favorite shows. The guts. Just going through, crashing through different like barrels and stuff and barely making it past, you know, these rolling rocks of people just gunning random people.
Oh, people gunning him down. I mean, you even have Dan get shot, and then Ben Wade looks down at his foot and he says, oh, you're lucky. And you realize that his fake foot has been shot.
Thank you for, you know, this this is a good time when you were a coward. Otherwise, you would have been really hurting with a lame foot.
Right. You got him running through. You have the son slowly again making his way through the backwoods of the town, you know, finding the long way around to get to the train station. And they get to the train station, kind of like a ticket booth, and they're like, "Where's the 310 to Yuma?" And he's like, "Oh, I guess it's running late."
Yeah.
Because the train isn't there yet.
Sorry, this doesn't really happen in my job where people are just shooting at my window.
Which is, I mean, it's kind of ironic where, I mean, the train is actually late, but like, fun little fact, if you actually start this movie at 1:19 p.m. or 1:19 a.m., doesn't really matter. But if you start it at that point, the time that the train arrives in the film will exactly be 3:10 on the clock.
That's
so that's actually,
that's nice. That's, I like that.
That's kind of fun. Yeah.
And he gets him there.
I mean, yeah, it does. It gets him there. And it's a fun little interesting fact that the train currently, I kind of mapped it out today. The train from Contention to Yuma is 311 miles. So it's almost even 310. So it's a 310 to Yuma. You're actually traveling 310 miles as well.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Ben Wade, when he stands up there and he's like, "Well, Dan, you did it. Like, let me tell you what you won." And, you know, he kind of gets ready to congratulate him on this huge monologue. And then, "Oh, no, I forgot. Like, my gang is trying to break me out and they're right behind you. They haven't left. They haven't gone anywhere." Christian Bale just gets riddled.
Charlie Prince just like unloads his entire, you know, like cartridge into him. I mean, I don't know if he shoots him with 5 or 6, but he plugs him with so many bullets. And then, you know, Christian Bale just falls down and Ben Wade he's clearly upset about it. He just like stares him down and then he's kind of calm. And all the while you have Christian Bale's son just like staring on. I mean, he just saw his dad get shot and fall down. Again, I don't know if this is just like how people were in 1884, or if it's the simple fact that, again, he's so emotionally disconnected to his dad that even after seeing him shot, he's not going to like scream out "no" and run towards the dad, or, you know, I don't know. That's what we would see in today's movies.
Yeah, you would have much more of that, like, "I'll save you, father," or just like the revenge,
right?
The, you know, I'll get him. But I'm glad that they didn't involve him and they let Russell Crowe's character just kind of, maybe it's kind of like it is his time of saying, "You know what, I am done for now. Like, I'll escape and I'll start a whole new posse. Sorry that my lover and Charlie Prince is you know, has pushed me too far," because all he really says is like, what, "Oh, Rancher was pretty tough," or what does he say?
Yeah, he's like, for a one-legged rancher, he's one tough son of a bitch. I don't even know if it's like, "You like him more than me," or he's all like, "Well, I mean, if you respected him in some sense, why did you kill him?" And again, I think it's the whole like, "Well, he took you away from me."
Or maybe it's because like, "Oh, you weren't buckled in yet. Like, if I shoot him and like, we still got you. We did it." Like, no, like, did you not see me climb up there and like smile at him like, "All right, I'm on, you win, good job."
Right, like, again, I think you're right. I think it's to the point where definitely Ben Wade, he definitely wanted out of this life. He had, at this point, what, he had stolen over $400,000,
some money
from the railroad company, from robbing all of those stagecoaches, which, gosh, I don't even know, I can't remember. I did the math earlier, but like $400,000 in 1884 was several millions.
You know, we didn't even talk about Butterfield in this. Dallas Roberts, I thought, did a fantastic job as just this very hands washed type individual, you know.
Right, where he didn't want him to be, you know, straight out killed, because I mean, you know, Kevin Duran's character was all like, "I think we should just kill him now, put a bullet
very
right
savage
in his noggin." He's like, no, we will have Ben Wade tried and then hanged in public, as he then like sniffed his cocaine,
yes,
from his sniffer box. But I mean, he wanted the justice. He wanted the justice done and the embarrassment to go along with basically making him an embarrassment.
Yeah.
For having several millions of dollars in
now. He wanted to make it known.
He definitely wanted that statement to be made. I mean, even when he was asking Dan, when he said, you know, Dan said, like, "I was the best shot in my regiment." And he said, "Did you fight for the North or the South?" And, you know, Dan looks at him and says, the North. And he's all like, we're Southern in name, but Chicago own. All right. $200.
Which is like, oh, you... Wait, you like me? No, wait, how do I read this?
It's like, yeah, it's like, I don't, are we, is that a wink, wink, nudge, nudge? Okay, it's a wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
And Ben Foster is just one of the, you know, the group of, you know, the posse, which is so weird because you have this, like, kind of mostly multicultural group where you have a, you know, you have a Mexican sharpshooter, you have an Apache, which the Apache doesn't even get used that much, but you don't.
No,
you don't have any black guys in this film, like not one,
which is crazy because if you look at the history of the cowboy, which a lot of people think like, oh, the great era of the cowboy, it was so big and large. And really, it wasn't. Like, the era of the cowboy lasted, like the majority of it lasted probably only about like 20 to 25 years. Like, the golden age of the cowboy was 20 to 25 years. And like 20%, and that's a huge number for the times, you know, even at that, even then, 20% of the cowboys that went around were black. But, you know, after Dan had been shot and is on the ground, at that point, Russell Crowe takes his gun, draws it. He has the hand of God, his gun back in his hand, and Charlie Prince stops in his tracks and turns around, and he knows it's coming too. He knows the dead silence of when Ben Wade has that gun in his hand, and he shoots Charlie in the chest, and he shoots the rest of the gang members, and then he shoots Charlie again, and that look of like, et tu, Brute?
What if he just tried to kiss him right there? He's like, he just like kind of puckers up a little bit and he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Oh, man. Or just like, just that staring in his face where like he could have just uttered that like questionable, like, you know, boss?
Sweetheart? Has like a pet name for him? Honey Boo?
Or like, you know, just like look at him and he's like, I waited for you. And then died.
And then he looks back. Who will help me carry all these men?
No one will help me.
Logan
carry
Logan Learman.
It is definitely one of those moments where like you even feel bad. Like, I felt bad when Charlie got shot. Like, I mean, he was a ruthless character, but I don't even think it was the fact that he died. I think it was the fact that Russell Crowe's character turned on him, and so you have this shock and awe of where he's like, I did all of this for you and you kill me?
Yeah.
Wow. Did I bet on the wrong horse?
It's sad, but again, great movie.
It is. It is a great movie. And with great movies come great lines. So you know what? This is, I think, a good time for you can say that again.
Oh my goodness. That's the most badass thing I've ever heard.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
You can say that again.
All right, so with You Can Say That Again, we like taking the best and the worst lines in the movie that we can find because, let's face it, we love quoting movies. The good, the bad, the ugly. So you know what? With my best line of the film, I think it's definitely something that sums up the entirety of the film. I think it sums up all the characterization of all the characters, regardless of who you're going to look at. And that's when the loan officer looks at Dan when he's begging and pleading for an extension. And the loan officer looks at him and says, sometime a man needs to be big enough to see how small he is.
Words to live by.
And right. Very much words to live by. I mean, you have Dan realizing that, you know, you need to realize your place, or you need to realize like when to man up. I think Russell Crowe realizes that he's a big enough man to realize that this is not a life that he always wants. And yeah, I just think it's just, again, like you said, good advice, good words to live by. How about you? What's the best line for you?
You said it earlier when Ben Wade is holding Byron, he says, you know, I always liked you, Byron, but you never know when, he never knew when to shut up. And even bad men love their mamas. Like, the joy of that line, I think, is derived from both his semi-respect for Byron. Like, he kind of has this, like, love-hate relationship with him.
He even said that. Yeah. He loved Byron. Like, he said, I've always liked you, Byron.
He's like, you know, I know that you're really not a bad guy at heart, even though I'll try and, you know, take you out when I can about oh yeah, Byron's killed lots of people, you know, and but deep down inside he's like, no, I really don't want to kill you, but you know what, you don't know when to shut up, and you kind of cross the line, you talked about my mom, so you get the cliff. You don't get my bullets,
don't
you just
you
get
talk about my
the cliff.
Mama. Yeah, you get the cliff.
A total cliffhanger. What if Byron? No. Oh, no. Byron.
Okay, so for a worse line, I think it comes down to when Charlie Prince and the gang, they come to the train tunnels where Luke Wilson and them are, and he notices that, you know, they have Ben Wade's gun, and they're looking around, and he looks at him, and he notices that they're lawmen, and he just says, are you all some kind of posse? And then he shoots him.
I came to chew bubblegum and kick ass.
And kick ass, and I'm all out of bubblegum. But he's like, are you all some kind of posse? And he shoots him. He's like, I hate posses. And I'm thinking, Charlie Prince, do you love anything?
And not only that, like, do you have to throw down little one-liners before you kill someone? Like,
right. No, yeah, just the... I didn't like it. Just asking him, like, the redundant question when you're right, going to kill them in one second.
Oh, gosh. Beyond Logan Learman's... Or Learman, I don't even know if I'm saying his name right. Someone correct us in an email. That's fine. You can send us the pronunciation. But besides all of his lines, what was the line that I can't even remember? What was my worst line?
I can't remember either.
Yeah, chop it up. All of everything that
chop
he
up
says,
all of his
I
lines.
Just, every time I cringe and I'm like, no, you're killing this movie. Stop. Get out of here. I cannot remember.
I don't know what you were going to say. I mean, like, I love the fact that, like, you know, the worst line that you're going to find
everything he says.
every single
I'm
one
doing
of his
a damn
line.
Better
you know,
job
honestly,
than you did, Dan. Like, oh, like, shut up.
Yeah. No, that's right. When he, you know, right before he, my cut it out scene, when he shoots the gun and when Dan asks him, like, you got a gun on him, son? And he says, I sure as sight have been doing a better job than you have. And I'm like, what? Sure as sight?
A fork.
I mean, that's a line that doesn't even make sense. You know, ironically enough, in the original film, it's actually not the son who goes with Dan's character to the train station. Ooh. It's the wife. I wonder what it would actually... I mean, honestly, like, you can go back and watch the original film and you can see the difference. But I'm wondering what would happen if you actually omitted the son from this movie, the current remake, and if it would actually make a huge difference, really.
I mean, that's a very interesting concept.
I don't know if it would actually make a huge difference. It would definitely take away from certain things, but I don't think it would make a great,
I would like to know what the viewers of this pod or the listeners of this podcast think. Write into us and tell us, do you think that, Alice, the wife should have tagged along in this group, or if we take this little crappy Frodo Baggins wannabe with us of Logan, I vote the wife.
Is this change from the original 1957 version the best choice? Obviously, there's different choices that they make that are spot on and I think are actually great changes. But, you know, should the wife have gone or should we just omit this?
But you know what, though? I don't think that he would have been as, like, courageous with the wife there. Like, I don't know. It's one thing to, like,
probably
try and be all, I'm the man. But when,
no, that's
when
very
it's like
true.
Your wife, the love of your wife
right
there,
right.
Who's like, yeah, let's go home.
He would have definitely been a little less courageous. He would definitely have been more protective of her. I don't think he would have gone running off as much as he would have. I think he also would have been keeping a closer eye on Ben Wade, because Ben Wade, being as charismatic as a villain as he is, he kept trying to flirt with his wife while he was at the house having dinner. And she was kind of resisting him, but not really, you know, turning away from the flattery.
Did you get that whole part about him talking about San Francisco and like, oh, she had this one girl, she had these really green eyes.
Dude, it's all a ploy that he's doing. It's not that he really remembers anything. He knows that Dan was there and watching. So he knows that he can get under Dan's skin. Because it's even like them when they're at the dinner table. He is shackled and eating dinner at the table. He can't run anywhere. He has guns on him. And even while he is a prisoner, he's still exerting power over Dan. Because even when he can't cut his meat, he has Dan come over. Yes. Cut his meat for him. And then he even says, oh, thank you, Dan. That's so kind of you. If you could cut off the fat, that'd be good.
And I don't gristle, like the gristle, fat that much.
And the gristle. I'm not a huge fan of the gristle.
It's kind of a poor cut of meat, but you know, I get it. I totally understand. Like, you dick.
Thank you, Dan. You're so kind. Thank you. And it's the audacity that even in chains, he has so much power over you. I think that's also another good scene in the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, this is a good example of a Western, you know, for the 2000s. I think this is a great little movie that definitely, you know, pays homage to the original, but definitely has some fantastic additions.
Shotgun your results for this film. What would you give it?
Shotguns for this result. I am definitely going to give this, you know, considering it is a remake, I'm going to take that into consideration, and the changes that it made, the casting that it could have had but definitely has now, I'm going to give it 3 shotguns.
Oh, so 3 out of 5? Okay.
3 out of 5shotguns.
I would actually give it just a slight bit more. I'd give it a 3.5.
Okay, all right.
3 shotguns and 1 sawed-off shotgun, I guess, yeah. What? Ooh, pacha! Yeah, I think that this one, I've watched it enough times to appreciate it where, you know, it's a little bit better than just like a really good film. I'm like, yeah, I can watch this. I can enjoy it. I really don't pick it apart when I watch it. I just.
Right. We just want to watch it. You just want to enjoy it.
There's plenty of films that I will pick apart. Even if though I like it, I'll just be like, well, that doesn't happen. This is stupid. But this one, I just experience.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of sad because, I mean, if you look at how much this movie made, you had an original budget of $55 million. And with the U.S. gross, it barely made the money back. It made $53 million for the U.S. gross, and then worldwide it only made $71 million. And it barely made its money back. It didn't necessarily turn a huge profit, and I think that's kind of a sad thing, because it's a good movie. I don't know, it's a good movie. And you know, something that I was doing earlier this week for the social media up on Facebook and up on Twitter, I was asking people, hey, what is a direct connection between the original 1957 310 to Yuma and the fantastic comedic stylings of Blazing Saddles? What is the direct connection between those two films? And my good friend Brian Shampoo wrote in and gave the correct answer to tell us that Frankie Lane did the original theme song for the 1957 310 to Yuma and the intro song to Blazing Saddles. It is the same artist, you know, also bring you fantastic little songs like Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Okay.
Yeah, we have the very old singer and a beautiful voice. And you know, guys, when we sign off, that's going to be what
that plays us out. All right.
The tail end of this episode. That's going to play us out. The original 1957 310 to Yuma intro song. It's about a minute and a half long, but guys, it's well worth the wait. And you should just listen to it. It's a great little ditty. It's a fun song.
Okay. Well, I look forward to it.
Yeah. But you know what? Before we go, we have one question from one of our fans out there. And this is one that was actually given to us with our last episode of Three Little Rascals, but we didn't necessarily you know, get to it then, but we're going to get to it now. We have Crystal from the Historia Unearthia podcast. She asked us, how do we choose our movies?
Well, that's a good question. Drew, how do we pick our movies besides...
besides, you know, ones that we just want to do.
We say, hey, can we one day do this one? Okay, good.
We'll do, yeah, we'll just do that. But you know what, guys? Originally, Nathan and I kind of got together, and I had found a website called Pick Me a Movie. Pick Me a Movie? Suggest Me. Sorry. I found the website. I can't even remember it. No. Suggestmeamovie.com. And I believe the original website is actually like suggestmemovie.com. If you go to our Podbean page, it's one of the links off to the right. And on this website, you can put in different factors like year and genre and how many scores it has on IMDb, because it directly connects to the IMDb database based on the rating system for it. So with all those factors contributed in, like, you know, I want 1993 comedy with a rating of, I don't know, a 7.0 or higher. And you click suggest. And it gives
I was
you
a little shocked to see how many movies that... Right. Would come up that, and I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that you know, that Christian Bale was in this movie, or that Brad Pitt plays this supporting role in this film. That's interesting. Okay, I might take a gander at this. Thank you. Suggest me a movie.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, it gives you a lot of different options, especially when you definitely don't want to sit around at night just staring at a screen, constantly scrolling through the options on Hulu or on Amazon Prime or on Netflix. And you're like, you know what? Gosh darn it. Someone make a choice for me. Well, hey,
as
guys.
If only there was a website that could do this for me.
For it. If there's only one that was there. So with that, we generated some lists of different films. You know, Nathan made his list and I made mine. And we did one for every single genre that is found on that website. And with that, you know, we go through those lists. We compare what we have for an option because we're trying to do a different movie genre every episode. And so we just kind of take a look at what our lists are. And generally, each of us chooses, we did four movies for each genre. And so generally, each of us are going to pick two. And then we'll take those four movies based for each two that we have, and we'll decide between those.
Which movie's coming up?
We can't tell what movie's coming up, Nathan. That's a secret.
But can we spoil it by saying that we have a very, very fun guest?
I can say that we do have a fun guest, but this is definitely one that is gonna have to wait a little while.
Okay,
longer.
So one in between that one?
Yeah, there's gonna be one before that one. I know which one you're
all
talking
right.
about.
Okay.
That one's gonna be later.
I mean,
in
spoiler
May.
Alert, they're all good. Listen to all of them many times.
They're all gonna good. Okay, they're all definitely gonna be good. Okay, fine. You know what, guys? We'll give you a little bit of a heads up. Coming in May, we have a fantastic fantasy film from the 1980s. And that's all I'm gonna leave it as. That's all I'm gonna give you.
And the 80s, as previously stated, is quite a wide variety.
It's chock full of them.
So let your imagination soar, but don't get too crazy. Just
don't get too crazy. Let's just be fair and just say you are not going to be disappointed.
I sure hope not, because I'm stoked.
No, I'm so excited. I'm so excited for that one. Yeah, it's going to be good.
I think that's going to do it.
I think it will. Hey, you know what, guys? Thank you for joining us for this fantastic episode on the remake, the 2007 remake, not 2012, of 310 to Yuma. You know, all of us here at the Real Feels podcast, I mean, all of us, that's just me and Nathan. But you know what? We love doing this for you every other week on Wednesdays, right here on Podbean, on iTunes. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for The Real Feels Podcast. If you want to email us, we have therealfeelspodcast@gmail.com. If you look for us on Twitter, it's @realfeelspod. And you know what? Hey, send us an email. Send us a suggestion if you want to possibly have us, you know, do a certain movie. Maybe we'll add it to that list of ours. If you have any listener comments or questions, or you just want to say hi, we'd love to say hi. We're always up on social media. You know,
true
I mean,
is.
I am, as soon as maybe, maybe when Nathan gets himself onto Facebook or Twitter, he'll get on there and
you know
he'll
what?
Say
if
hi
we
to you,
have but... we'll play this like God did with Sodom and Gomorrah. If I hear 50 righteous souls request that I get a Twitter, I'll get a Twitter.
50 people.
That's all
that's
it
all
takes.
It's gonna take, guys. 50 people, and Nathan will make a Twitter.
And
you.
If you can
not
get Russell Crowe to actually like walk up to me and be like, This guy needs to get a Twitter.
this guy needs to get a Twitter.
I'd be okay with that.
You know, Nathan, before we go, we actually have a promo from our good friends at the Hey Down in Front podcast. So, guys, get ready to listen to this.
Hey everyone, Blaze and Will here from Hey Down in Front Podcast.
Join us every Tuesday as we provide the movie commentary that you never asked for.
Who's throwing a party?
That's going to be terrible.
We go over our weekly entertainment-based adventures.
God, if you're listening, help!
Then we dig in and tear apart the movies everyone loves.
Oh, I had my mouth open, you f***ing animal!
Check us out on iTunes, Podbean, and Stitcher.
I had to rewind myself.
I know! All right, thanks for mansplaining that to me, please.
And give us a follow on Instagram at heydownfront_podcast and Twitter at HDIF_podcast. See you next Tuesday.
Oh, okay, Blaze.
All right, guys, we will catch you later, and thanks for joining us on the Real Feels Podcast.
Later!
Bye!
There is a lonely train called the 310 to Yuma. The pounding of the wheels is more like a mournful sigh. There's a legend and there's a rumor. When you take the 310 to Yuma, you can see the ghosts of outlaws go riding by,
riding by.
In the sky,
in the sky.
While below the cattle are thirsting for rain. It's all so true, they say, on the 310 to Yuma. A man may meet his fate, for fate travels everywhere. Though you've got no reason to go there, and there ain't a soul that you know there, when the 310 to Yuma whistles its sad refrain, take that train,
take that train,
take that train.